BBC World Service, the news read by Sandy Walsh. In the continuing protests against the overthrow of President Gorbachev, several thousand people maintained an all-night vigil outside the Russian Parliament building in Moscow. The demonstrators were expressing support for the challenge to the Soviet Union's new hardline communist rulers by the President of the Russian Federation, Mr. Boris Yeltsin. And some Soviet troops have shifted their allegiance to Mr. Yeltsin. Amid growing international concern at the turn of events, President Bush has issued a strongly worded statement calling for Mr. Gorbachev to be restored to power. The day after the ousting of Mr. Gorbachev as leader of the Soviet Union, the President of the Russian Federation, Mr. Boris Yeltsin, continues to be the focus of opposition to the hardline communist takeover. Several thousand people in Moscow kept an all-night vigil outside the Federation's Parliament building in support of Mr. Yeltsin's challenge to the new leadership. Others manned barricades nearby. Many deputies remained inside the building, saying they were prepared for a long siege. People had taken to the streets in defiance of tough emergency powers announced by the committee set up to administer the country. These include a ban on demonstrations and sweeping restrictions on the media. There was a heavy military presence in the city throughout the day, but a number of Soviet tank crews have shifted their allegiance to Mr. Yeltsin. Nine of them arrived at the Russian Parliament, and they turned their turrets away from the building to defend it. In the middle of the night, they were joined by some vehicles carrying paratroops. Further demonstrations of support for Mr. Yeltsin were held in other major cities, including Leningrad and Gorky. Yesterday, Mr. Yeltsin announced his own decree declaring the orders of the Emergency Committee illegal on Russian territory. He called on all army, police and KGB members to switch their allegiance to the Russian Federation, saying all executive organs on Russian territory should take their lead from him until an emergency meeting of the Congress of People's Deputies was convened. Mr. Yeltsin called for a general strike today, and he urged the people of Moscow to defend the Russian Parliament. Coal miners in the Kuzbass region of Siberia are reported to have already gone on strike. In the Baltic republics, Soviet troops have taken television stations off the air and seized ports and other key sites, as the military commander of the region declared himself in control. Lithuanian officials said about 100 tanks had entered the capital, Vilnius, during the evening. Military helicopters were reported to have been flying over the Latvian capital, Riga, where the local radio station also reported that Soviet troops had occupied the Interior Ministry. Latvian radio reports that the driver of a minibus had been shot dead, apparently by troops. Government leaders in all three Baltic republics have called for resistance to any military action. As the events in the Soviet Union continued to unfold, President Bush intervened with a tough statement calling on the new Soviet leadership to restore Mr. Gorbachev to power. Mr. Bush, who interrupted his holiday to return to the White House, spent the day with senior officials analyzing what effect the takeover was likely to have on superpower relations. In a written statement, Mr. Bush said the coup was a misguided and illegitimate effort that bypassed Soviet law and the will of the Soviet people. The President said the United States was deeply disturbed by the events in the Soviet Union and condemned what he called the unconstitutional resort to force. He said the United States would not support economic aid programs for the Soviet Union if constitutional means were abandoned. The World Bank announced it was suspending a plan to create a $30 million program to give technical aid to the Soviet Union. Britain has suspended its own program of technical aid to the Soviet Union worth about $80 million. It has urged European Community foreign ministers to do the same when they hold an emergency meeting in The Hague later today. China has given its first reaction. A statement carried by the official New China News Agency said that the changes in the Soviet Union were an internal affair, and China hoped that the Soviet people would solve their own problems by themselves and maintain political stability. The statement added that China wanted Sino-Soviet relations to develop on the basis of peaceful coexistence. This news comes to you in the World Service of the BBC. When the takeover was first announced, it was said that President Gorbachev could not continue in office because of the state of his health. At his first news conference yesterday, the new interim president, Mr. Gennady Yanayev, said Mr. Gorbachev was ill and undergoing medical treatment in the Crimea, where he's been on holiday. He said Mr. Gorbachev was safe and under no threat, and in due course, a medical bulletin would be issued. The Soviet Union's former foreign minister, Mr. Eduard Shevardnadze, says that he is worried that the ousting of Mr. Gorbachev could lead to civil war. Mr. Shevardnadze, who resigned in December after warning of a plot by hardline communists to seize control, appealed to the Soviet people to join forces against those who were now in power. At a news conference in Moscow, he described the developments as a national tragedy, and he called on the hardliners to allow Mr. Gorbachev to appear on television. Workers employed by the official Soviet government newspaper Izvestia have refused to print today's editions. This was after the paper's editorial board had dropped a plan to publish a statement by the Russian president, Mr. Boris Yeltsin. Izvestia had been one of only 9 newspapers allowed by the emergency committee to be published. The committee has also closed down a small independent radio station in Moscow, as well as the radio and television stations of the Russian Federation. An emergency session of Yugoslavia's federal presidency has been discussing the impact on the Yugoslav crisis of the coup in the Soviet Union. The meeting is being held against a background of intense fighting in central Croatia in the town of Pakrac. Belgrade Radio says that Serbian forces have taken over the town and captured a large number of Croatian police and militia. However, police contacted in Pakrac say that with the arrival of Croat National Guard reinforcements, the town is holding out. Financial markets in Asia have opened calmer than yesterday when there were sharp losses in reaction to events in the Soviet Union. The BBC Tokyo correspondent says some brokers feel they may have overacted, but investors are still very nervous. Share prices in Japan showed an early recovery, but dropped to end the morning session slightly down. Now, to end the news, the main points again. Several army tanks and thousands of people maintained an all-night vigil outside the Russian Parliament building in Moscow in support of the challenge to the new Soviet leaders by the President of the Russian Federation, Mr. Boris Yeltsin. President Bush has called on the new Soviet leadership to restore Mr. Gorbachev to power. He said the United States was deeply disturbed by events in the Soviet Union. The World Bank has suspended a multi-million-dollar plan to aid the Soviet Union. A spokesman for the bank said members of the board would not be voting on the proposal today, as had been originally intended. And amid intense fighting in Croatia, the Yugoslav Federal Presidency has met to discuss the impact of the Soviet coup on their own crisis. And that's the end of the news. Now from London, here's Judy Swallow with 24 Hours.
Hello. A few years ago, it would have been inconceivable for Americans in their thousands to take to the streets to express support for a Soviet leader. But Mikhail Gorbachev has so changed perceptions of the evil empire that last night New Yorkers were on the streets, many reportedly openly weeping at his downfall. In Moscow, the rhetoric was chillingly reminiscent of the Cold War years.
Mikhail Gorbachev is now on vacation. He is undergoing treatment in the south of our country. He is very tired after these many years.
Gennady Yanayev, the acting president of the Soviet Union, now at the helm after the coup that toppled his former boss. This morning's papers here in Britain have all concentrated their coverage on the defiance of the Russian leader Boris Yeltsin against the hardline communists who seized power, and his call for the military, KGB and police to follow him. So the man, for so long portrayed as President Gorbachev's fiercest critic and rival, has become his champion. I'm joined on the line now by our Moscow correspondent, Bridget Kendall. Bridget, first of all, do we know where President Gorbachev is? Because Boris Yeltsin said he didn't even know if he was alive.
No, we only have the information that came yesterday from Vice President Yanayev, which you just repeated, that he is in the south of the country, in the Crimea. We've had nothing from him to confirm that he is indeed alive and that he is all right. Boris Yeltsin is calling for him to be allowed to speak on television. It doesn't seem at the moment, from what we've heard from the new Kremlin leaders, that they're going to allow that to happen.
We have seen shows of strength. Have there been any reports of violence?
Not in Moscow, no. I've just been out on the streets. Around Boris Yeltsin's Russian parliament, there is now a quite substantial barricade. Some of the streets leading to the building have been blocked off with impromptu barricades, also with tanks. There are now several tanks, certainly over a dozen, from apparently two divisions outside Moscow, reinforced by paratroopers who are armed and say they'll shoot if need be. They have their tanks, of course, their barrels positioned away from the parliament to protect President Yeltsin if need be. So there's now a substantial defense setting up there. On the other side of the city, near the Kremlin, where the Kremlin leaders, of course, are conducting their regime, there is a long chain of armored cars, nose to bumper, all the way around the Kremlin, with other Soviet soldiers, those who presumably are still taking their orders from the Kremlin, apparently protecting the Kremlin. This is the situation in Moscow, but there's no confrontation, no violence.
This defection of the tank crews you mentioned, do you think it's an isolated incident, or are we actually seeing the beginning of a split in the army?
I don't know. I think it is very significant indeed. In the first place, it's not just one division. It's tanks, apparently, according to the people I spoke to down at the parliament, from two, plus paratroopers. They said they heard about Boris Yeltsin's appeal for them to come over and recognize his authority by word of mouth. And they seem to think that a lot of people would know about this. Whether it's a trend that is going to be repeated in other cities, we'll have to wait and see. But at the moment, it's potentially significant.
And what has been the response so far to Boris Yeltsin's call for general strike?
Well, we've only had sporadic reports. The difficulty of communication across this vast country, the Russian Federation, is immense. We understand from representatives of workers in the Siberian mining regions, in Vorkuta in the north and Kemerovo, that they are prepared, some of them, to go on strike today. Indeed, some of them may have walked out already. There have also been reports, again unconfirmed, of possible strikes, workers walking out in factories in Leningrad and in factories in the Urals, the heartland of Soviet heavy industry. We don't know what that's going to come to. We'll have to wait and see today. And indeed, whether workers are going to come under pressure locally, which will make it difficult for them to strike. That's something we still have to assess.
Finally, Bridget, Mr. Yanayev has said President Gorbachev might be able to resume his duties in the near future. Does anyone believe him?
I think very few people believe him. You have to understand that this is old Kremlin talk. The idea of a political leader being too unwell to carry on in his duties is an old way of saying that he's been chucked out because the political regime has changed. It's a device President Gorbachev used. You may remember on TASS it was always announced someone was going on pension because they were no longer able to function. They were not well enough to function, and I think that's the way people interpret this. President Gorbachev is out politically as far as the new regime is concerned, and if Vice President Yanayev says he may come back to resume his duties, that's a way of just softening the blow and trying to make it seem more respectable.
Bridget Kendall in Moscow, thank you very much for joining us. Well, it's often said a week is a long time in politics. A month, it seems, is an eternity. In July, the then Vice President, Gennady Yanayev, was interviewed through a translator by one of our correspondents, Martin Sixsmith. Not a word then about coups, not even minor differences of opinion. according to the man who today is in Mr. Gorbachev's place in the Kremlin.
The Soviet leadership has a full understanding of the fact that we're all traveling down the same path. And there are no differences between the president, the vice president, and the prime minister. And I think that the discussion in the Supreme Soviet is being interpreted as having a certain political significance when all that's involved really is matters of everyday work. When Prime Minister Pavlov proposed that the cabinet of ministers should be given supplementary powers, the issue wasn't a political revolution or an attempt to subtract from the president's powers. No, the issue was that the cabinet of ministers needed to have the ability to make speedy decisions on the matters facing us today. So my view is that both the President, the Supreme Soviet, and the Vice President, and the Prime Minister, and all the key ministers are all pulling together as a single team, the team of Perestroika, President Gorbachev's team, and there are no grounds for any other interpretation.
You yourself are very close to President Gorbachev. From our point of view in the West, it seems that Mr. Gorbachev is maneuvering between the left and the right. Judging by what happened in Lithuania in January, he seemed to us then to be moving towards the right, whereas now he's again on the path of reform. Can you explain this?
I often imagine myself in Mr. Gorbachev's position and wonder how I would manage a specific situation. The president has to be above political partisanship. He has to take various points of view into consideration as fully as possible. He has to take decisions on the basis of contrasting various standpoints and points of view. When he is accused of going first with the right wing and then with the left wing, well, left and right are very artificial divisions for a start. It depends which side you're looking from. Sometimes those on the right appear to be on the left, vice versa. The real issue is to get the measure of the supporters and opponents of Perestroika.
Gennady Yanayev speaking in July. Today, he's just one day into his new job as acting president of the Soviet Union. The events of August the 19th will long be remembered. Will he? Jenny Waters reports.
After Gennady Yanayev was elected Soviet vice president last year, he described himself to reporters as a normal kind of guy. Until Monday morning, that was exactly how most observers viewed him. A solid bureaucrat, chosen by Gorbachev as a competent but unthreatening number two. Yet Soviet deputies so doubted Yanayev's commitment to perestroika last year that it took them two polls to elect him as vice president. According to Margot Light, a Soviet specialist at the London School of Economics, he was perceived as an old-style communist conservative.